Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, why are people into that, listeners? Tina Horn here, reminding you that April is spring shower season at the Pleasure Chest. To celebrate all things fluid, PleasureChest.com is offering 15% off all G-Spot vibrators April 19th through April 28th. This month's featured brands on PleasureChest.com are Vibratex and Shockrubs, so you can shop online for sweet savings on some classic vibrators and crystal dildos curved just right to put the pressure where you like it best. The Pleasure Chest has been keeping you sweaty and satisfied for nearly 50 years. Follow Pleasure Chest on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram for updates on squirt-centric workshops and soaking wet discounts. To find out more, visit their stores in New York City, Los Angeles, and Chicago, or check out PleasureChest.com. Spring 2019 is officially sprung. And now, on with the show. Hi, Andrea.
Hi, Tina.
How does it feel to be on Why Are People Into That?
I'm so excited. As a longtime listener, I'm very pleased to be here.
That makes me feel really good. See, there's like no, it's all community. There's no differentiation between fans and guests and listeners and speakers. It's all just like one big slutty mess. Andrea Glick, LMSW, which stands for Licensed Master of Social Work, or do you prefer Mistress of Social Work?
Oh my God, yes, Mistress of Social Work.
Awesome. So Andrea Glick is a psychotherapist, somatic healer, sex educator, and witch. Love it. So many witches on this damn show. Andrea specializes in treating trauma and PTSD for queer and trans folks using body-based and feminist therapy practices to help clients come home to themselves. That is so beautiful.
Thank you.
Andrea practices at the Gender and Sexuality Therapy Collective in New York City, and I am so thrilled to have you here. How are you?
I'm so good. I'm very happy to be here, too.
I love your Eileen Wuornos I'm With Her shirt.
Thank you.
Really, really appreciate that.
Just manifesting her energy into the room.
100%.
Always.
100%. Yeah. I want to start with a little interrobang today. And I'm so excited and curious to talk to you about your work. And your practice is relatively new. You finished school like in mid-2018, right? And started your practice in late 2018?
I started my practice in 2017.
Okay, cool.
Right out of grad school. Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. And so relatively new, but obviously all of the things that you are specializing in are things that have been on your mind for a long time.
Yes, definitely.
And so before we get into your work, I want to ask you, since you listen to the show, you know that I've been asking people this question, and I really want to try to ask as many people as I can this question this year, which is, under what circumstances would you have sex with a robot?
Wow. I think it would have to be the robot of, like, a celebrity that I've always wanted to have sex with. God. Like... Cate Blanchett.
Oh, great choice. Great. Yeah, that's interesting. So, like, would the robot be programmed to behave like Cate Blanchett?
Probably, like, a little bit like Carol. Also,
okay,
probably.
Okay. Now we're really getting into it. Okay.
Yeah.
So you want a mommy bot. But like a 50s refined, like mommy top.
Right.
Femme
top.
I
think what I mean by that is, like, I would be interested in the robot if the robot could be like a character that I've always been really interested in, and like being with Cate Blanchett and her role playing Carol would also be fine.
You're like, I would take that too. Part of the program.
Yeah.
No, that's super smart. I like the idea of characters. I mean, in some ways, I think we don't recognize enough that a robot is an object, and we like personify mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. like really intense ways, like that show like what people think about women and their experience of sex. Or like, I've often said that I feel like sex robot phobia is actually just bottom phobia. In some ways, I think we do default to the idea of just like this like prone bottom, like lying there and getting like filled with semen or whatever, as opposed to the idea that like sentience and free will aside, that a robot could perform a character and mm-hmm. and engage you in a scene.
Totally.
And help you live out a fantasy.
Yeah. Yeah, that one.
Cool. So what would Robot Carol, Cate Blanchett, do?
Oh, wow.
Just like sit across from you at like a department store cafe and like slowly cut her meat or cut your meat into small pieces.
I know. See, I don't know, because we didn't get enough in the movie of how Carol fucks, right?
Well, so what do you, I mean, but this is the point of the fantasy right. and the sex robot. Like,
yeah.
How do you think?
I'm like sweating. I think that Carol is a very loving and tender and stern top.
Cool.
And she probably has a lot of things to teach younger girls and really enjoys teaching and being a mentor.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree.
Yeah.
100%. Okay, great answer. Thank you. So tell us about your practice. What does it mean for you to be a therapist mm-hmm. and to talk about the ideology and science behind your practice in a way that is respectful of the boundaries of your clients? Because you're obviously not going to come in here and be like, oh, well, you know, this one client does this. And then
I think I can talk about themes that mm-hmm. come up. So my training is in trauma and body-oriented therapy.
Cool.
And before that, as you know, I was a sex educator. And so that is also very much informs the work that I do, but also the people who choose me. So I have found that the clients who seem to be wanting to work with me are survivors, are poly, are kinky, are queer, and are looking for people who have a lot of understanding about that so that they don't have to literally pay to educate their therapist.
I've been there.
Yes. And also that does happen, and that's okay. I don't think that's a bad thing, but if you can avoid it, great.
Totally.
And to know that you're going to be respected for your desires and not pathologized,
100%.
Which is an experience that I think a lot of people can relate to, where a desire or a relationship structure is pathologized as being a trauma response. Sometimes it's just not about that, or sometimes it is, and the space needs to be a place where you can talk about that without knowing that your therapist has some sort of like deep feeling that it's all because of your dad or something.
Well, and also if the bad feelings that you're having, or the depression that you're dealing with, or the anxiety that you're dealing with, or whatever degree of mental health that you're struggling with does correlate to any of those things, we need to be able to talk about them in ways that are not blaming or pathologizing.
Yeah.
It reminds me of the ongoing discourse about sex work representation, where we feel pressure to either be the most extremely happy hooker or we're the damaged goods, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, I need to be able to talk about having a bad day at work without somebody saying, without a therapist being like, well, like, this is what you get, or, you know, or like people in my life, you know, I would like to be able to go to a therapist and have them talk about the relationship between my work and anxiety that I might be having. The reason that you have this is that you like made this really bad choice. So now we need to like mea culpa for the bad choice, being able to like understand it in a larger
right.
context and, you, and not yeah. de- and not demonizing mm-hmm. the patient.
You also wouldn't want your therapist to be like, but sex work is this like radical amazing thing and you're not allowed to have a bad day at work.
100, that's right? exactly
so
right.
So it's like you can have a therapist who's really educated in sex work, but you also want that therapist to be able to hold the complexities of when it's not a perfect day.
Right. Like if I come in and say that I had a bad day at work or even something that is like more relevant to my life now is anxiety around boundaries in social media and like how I like mm-hmm. represent the character of Tina Horn on Instagram or on this podcast versus the privacy that I would like to have that is separate from that and the anxieties that I have around it. I also don't want a therapist to say to me, I thought you said that sex work was a good thing in your life. Mm-hmm. Or I thought you said that you like that you really love your work and you like yeah. love doing this podcast or you love posting naked pictures of your ass on the internet and yet you were feeling anxiety about it.
Yeah.
How can you have anxiety about something that you love? Like I've had that experience with therapists and yes. it's disorienting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That comes up in my office a lot with Polly where people are like, this fucking sucks.
Right.
And it would be so easy for someone to be like, oh, well, maybe you're monogamous. When it can be like, okay, how can we hold all of the things that are really heartbreaking and challenging and difficult about poly and the desire that you had from the beginning to do this and that like, yeah, maybe this is something that doesn't work for you, but I'm not going to be like, there's the proof that like this isn't for you. Your therapist has to be able to hold when it's not a good day at work or when the relationship that you're in isn't going well and not jump to those conclusions.
If everybody that was trying out ethical non-monogamy or polyamory or an open relationship had a tough time was like, well, I guess polyamory doesn't work or I guess it's not for me, like then we're never going to actually learn
yeah.
collectively how to navigate these things that come up.
Right. Yeah, and also unhelpful for the therapist to just be like, again, like, but you said that you wanted this, and like poly is like the most radical and like feminist way of doing relationships, so you aren't allowed to feel this way. You have to be able to hold the nuance.
So how do you hold the nuance?
Well, I think that's a very feminist thing and also a very I talk a lot about spectrums and letting go of the binary. So like the binary of like poly is all good or all bad or sex work is all good or all bad. And that like two things can be true at the same time, which is a feminist idea that I feel like I really came into through that part of my life and being able to hold that like poly, for example, is really radical and amazing and undoes all of these really harmful relationship ideas. And also there's a lot of feelings that are really challenging that don't come up necessarily with monogamy and it isn't perfect every day. And it's not for everybody, even if you are like a radical feminist dyke, for example.
Right. Also, if you like try non-monogamy and it doesn't work, that doesn't mean that you're a failure to the cause.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Like one individual relationship where you find after a period of time that it's not working, it doesn't mean that you are like have like not evolved.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
I'm so curious about what the word somatic means within your practice, and you also mentioned body therapy. That doesn't necessarily mean like body work or touch, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So the kind of somatic practice that I'm getting trained in is called sensory motor psychotherapy. And it is using our bodies as our greatest tool for healing. And the first way to do that is just to understand how the body works, in particular the nervous system and our brains. And a lot of times when people, especially trauma survivors, but I think everybody, for example, anxiety and depression, those are chemical and physical experiences.
Yeah.
So you can go to therapy for 10 years and just talk about depression without ever talking about what depression looks like in your nervous system or what it looks like in your body. And so it's a lot about understanding that our bodies are a part of our emotional state, and we're not like just heads floating around. People have found that Xanax is really helpful with panic attacks, and that is a true thing. And also, we do have a lot of internal capacities to calm our nervous system, which is just what Xanax does.
Right.
And so it's not to say that that is not a great solution, but we do contain everything that we need inside of us. And some people need more, and that's totally okay. But to start to think about our bodies, especially for survivors, as a place of healing instead of a place of unsafety.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's cool.
It's really cool. Mm-hmm. That I'm like relaxing just thinking about it. Just thinking about like that possibility, and it's very comforting to know that you have that within you, and that that the mind body split may be a myth.
Yeah, definitely. And also I think in particular for women and for queer people, that we have to leave our bodies every day to get through the day. Or honestly, humans, like every human on the subway has to dissociate to deal with being on the subway.
Totally.
Right. So the therapy is also about becoming embodied again after being taught through sexual trauma or through living in patriarchy and white supremacy. That,
or riding the MTA.
Or riding the MTA, or all of them at once. That our bodies are not a safe place to be or a good place to be. And I think sex has a lot to do with that, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what is the relationship between BDSM and therapy?
Yeah, so many things. I think I can speak as a trauma and somatic therapist in particular about this, because it involves the body.
Yeah.
And it is a way of...
BDSM?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is a way of engaging your body in pleasure, but also in any sort of physical action that feels really healing.
Yeah.
And...
which sometimes can be pain or intensity or endurance.
Just like a therapy session.
Right.
Painful and long and hard.
Right.
And
it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Or people have really strong reactions with kink, like crying and release and screaming. And
I love a good scream.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're connecting with yourself. You are embodied. It is it is perhaps one of the only times that a lot of people get to experience being in their body in a positive way. And it is also very similar to a lot of somatic therapies where you are moving energy through. That's in particular kind of a school of thought called somatic experiencing, which is that we become the most traumatized when we hold in traumatic energy or kinetic energy. And animals are really good at this, right? Animals are really good at, like, shaking something off.
Right.
And humans, we just, like, bear down and hold it, and then it gets trapped. And so I think that kink is a really incredible way of getting to release that energy that does get trapped.
I like the way that you were putting that in terms of kinetic energy, because when you think about it, not to personify energy, but kinetic energy wants to move, right?
Yeah.
And so if you're like stopping up the dam of kinetic energy, if you're putting the finger in the dike of kinetic energy, it makes sense that would cause wear and tear, that it would cause distress. Just like a river that wants to flow being dammed, and that you know, if you're doing that in a way that is not sustainable, then eventually the levee is going to break,
something is
going to blow, and it might not be in the way that you want it to, or the time that you want it to. It might not be in a way that you can comprehend or understand or fix, or it's just like created more issues.
Right. Like, so our nervous systems can get stuck in on or off mode. So on mode is anxiety, anger, hypervigilance, like any sort of very heightened state. And I'm sure we can both think of people who we know who are really trapped in that place.
Yeah.
And then there are people who are really stuck in off, which is numb, dissociation, depression. And that both happens because our nervous systems get trapped in those states when they've had to be that way over and over and over. And I think just like any kind of body movement, so this can be like yoga or getting flogged, like that.
Or dancing,
yes. That can engage our nervous systems and bring us out of that state, either calming us or activating us. And I think that kink is a great way to do that.
So why do we get stuck Why? Mm-hmm. Where does trauma come from?
Yeah. So our nervous systems are always just trying to protect us. When I say they get stuck and they get, you know, trapped in on or off, like that is in our best interest, right? So like if you're with someone who is really violent, for example, in like an intimate partnership,
yeah,
it's not safe for you to have really big reactions back at them because right. that puts you in danger. So then people will get kind of trapped in this numb, frozen place because that's what's safe. Or if people have had to leave situations really quickly, repeatedly, it's in their best interest to be like ready to go at all times.
Ugh,
yeah. Yes.
Sorry, I'm really trying not to put myself on the couch right now.
Yeah,
I can relate.
Yes. So, and that is protective, right? Our bodies are just trying to support us so that we can stay safe.
Yeah.
And then sometimes when we are able to experience safety, our bodies are not on the same page. So we can cognitively know this person is safe. This person is not going to hurt me. But our bodies are like, I'm not sold. And so there can be a disconnect. Mm. So a lot of engaging our bodies can be helping them understand safety when we may logically know that we're not in the bad place or with the bad person anymore, but our bodies are not in the, just haven't caught up to that yet.
Or our bodies have learned to think that it would be better to just remain in that state so that we won't be fooled again.
Definitely. It's all an adaptation, right? Like our bodies are adapting to keep us safe in this world.
Why do animals know how to have a parasympathetic nervous response when they sense danger and like all the things that we can imagine like different animals doing, like their hair raising up and, and freezing like a deer frozen in headlights. Mm-hmm. That's literally what that is, right? Hackles raised, like prepared, prepared to dash, prepared to fight, whatever, and then observe and ascertain that there is no immediate threat and like physically like shake it off.
Mm-hmm.
Why can animals do that, but we can't or like are not as in touch with our ability to do that?
Yeah. So
is it TV? Did TV break us?
I'm sure that has a lot to do with
it. Is it capitalism? Right. Could it be capitalism?
You know, I think it probably has a lot to do with losing practices in our cultures because of colonialism.
Right.
I'm sure that had, like, so there's probably that part of it. And then there's also the, like, more biological part, which is that humans have a prefrontal cortex and mammals don't. So we have
non-human mammals don't.
Right, thank you.
Right,
yes.
Yeah. You're still a mammal.
Yeah, right, it's true. It's true. See, that was my prefrontal cortex talking, where I'm like, I am evolved. But yeah, so we have this ability of critical thinking, which is a blessing and a curse at the same time. So it means we're less we're less embodied. We're going to think before we're going to feel sometimes. We're not going to go with our gut and trust our instincts. I think that also has a lot to do with the world that we live in, being taught not to trust and like listen to our bodies. We're not taught. We might, I think because we have critical thinking skills, we have to be taught how to be really in touch with our bodies. It's not necessarily going to come naturally, although I'm sure that it would in a different society.
What kind of society?
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, one that is not burdened by white supremacy and patriarchy.
Cool. Yeah. That sounds cool. Sign me up.
Yeah.
So there's interpersonal trauma, and then there's the trauma of colonialism and patriarchy and heteronormativity and cis supremacy and white supremacy, and that trauma affects everyone differently.
Mm-hmm.
Lots and lots of people and their bodies are affected by that trauma.
Yeah.
For some people, BDSM has potential as a practice for healing from that trauma.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to being fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right?
Like, totally.
Like BDSM can be fun and can be about pleasure for its own sake or human connection for its own sake or connecting with oneself for its own sake. But obviously BDSM isn't for everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do you know that BDSM is right for you, both in terms of potential for pleasure and in terms of potential for healing?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that has a lot to do with listening to your body and learning how to listen to your body. So being able to feel that this, like, it feels good, it feels releasing, knowing what that feels like in your body. So that's a lot of mindfulness.
Yeah.
Of learning what that, like, physically feels like. So, like,
and feeling like you deserve that from
your
body and from sex and from your relationship, that you deserve to seek catharsis and pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. And if you are trying it and it's really doesn't feel releasing or doesn't feel pleasurable, listen to that.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing too, is like you have to develop the ability to know how to listen to your body. And that does take a lot of time. And I think kink can be a great in at that for sure. You're experiencing really big emotions and physical sensations. And so you can, for example, like when I get kicked, I feel it in the pit of my stomach and that feels awesome. When I'm being held down, I feel really secure and safe. So you can, so there is like physical sensations that can happen, and it's about listening to that. Or if something is like, yeah, nope, I keep trying this thing and like there's this feeling in my gut that's telling me like that this isn't for me, listen to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And also, I think that it's important for people to remember that kink is not a monolith, and that and that if you're curious about BDSM and you try one thing and you get that bad feeling in the pit of your stomach, you should listen to that. But also that doesn't mean that your explorations have to be over.
Totally.
There could be a different activity. You might enjoy topping rather than bottoming, or vice versa. It also might be that your chemistry with that person, many people, their first intercourse or oral sex experiences, like, maybe don't feel that great, but they keep trying until they find the person that it feels good with, hopefully.
Yeah. To come at it with curiosity instead of judgment. So, like, trying something out, like, oh, I hated that. And, like, oh, I probably don't. I'm bad bottom and I don't like kink and fuck, you know, like, so, but to be like, oh, I just learned a lot about myself. I really don't like anal sex. Wow, how fascinating. Like, I am so curious about what it would be like to do this instead.
Yeah.
And I think that things can feel a lot more challenging and heavy when we have a lot of judgment about ourselves, or like the way that it went. And so I will often say to clients, like, this is an experiment. Like, just like, this is all that is like getting more information about this.
And just like any scientific experiment, if you change one small element, you might get different data.
Yes, right. So like to go back to like the anal sex example, right? So being like, oh, wow, that really didn't work for me. Maybe I need to try like using a plug first, right? So like,
totally.
Yeah, change, like being very mindful and aware of the different components.
Totally. Cool.
Yeah.
Man, I'm like, sign me up.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I feel like it's almost a commonly known mainstream cliche that part of the job of the dominatrix is therapist, right? There's like a New Yorker cartoon that used to hang the wall of the dungeon that I got my start in, where there's like a dominatrix in the therapy chair and a guy on the couch, and she says, "And so when did that make you feel like a little bitch?" Or something like that, right?
I've seen it.
I think we've all seen it, right? And so, exactly. Like, you know, if it's a New Yorker joke, then like, this is like hit the mainstream or the like public intellectual mainstream. But I can attest to my own experience as a dominatrix, providing therapy and feeling aware of that and comfortable with it. And also understanding like the difference between like the kind of emotional labor that I do want to do through flocking someone, through tying someone up, through calling someone a little bitch, through sticking them with needles, whatever, or through allowing them to negotiate those, doing those things with me. But your role is not about using BDSM as therapy. It's about helping people to understand how BDSM might be therapeutic in their own lives, right?
Totally. Right. And also, like we were talking about before, where noticing how things feel with your body, I can, through different somatic practices, help people know how to come back into themselves and, and start paying attention and just noticing like what your arm feels like. Like what does it feel like to have arms versus just being like, right, like a bobbing head out there in the world.
Yeah.
And then they can bring that into the room with their play partner.
Yeah.
So being able to be present in their bodies. And then also I think there's a lot of processing about scenes or dynamics that happen in the room.
Which is great. Please take... do that job so that dominatrixes can like focus on the flogging.
Yes, absolutely.
Not that I like a little processing.
Yeah,
I have a rate for that, and so do you.
Yes,
yeah,
it is all the same. Yes, yes.
Can you give me an example of? I mean, obviously, people you know should come to you and hire you, but can you give me an example of a somatic practice technique that you teach in your work with people?
I find that a good place to start is just starting to identify where feelings live in our bodies. So if a client comes in and they're like, I'm really stressed about this. Okay, where is that? Like, where does the stress live? And people are usually like, and they'll like grab their chest, like right here. And I'm like, is it tightening or is it hardening? Like, what is the like sensation? Does it have a color? And so just like turning inwards, starting to locate what's happening in your body. So I'm coming in here. I'm really excited to talk to you. I'm a little nervous. I'm noticing my hands are a little sweaty. My feet are a little cold. I have like butterflies in my stomach. So just and so just to like
I have that present.
Yes. Right. So instead of just being like I'm nervous and excited, those are the feelings. Right. Being like, wow, this is what's happening to my body. Or for a, like a client who's in subspace, like what does that physically feel like, right? Or what's happening inside during those scenes? And that's something that we can talk about in the room, but you have to build the ability to go inside yourself.
It's also a really great like empathy machine for helping people to understand, helping people who may not have experience with BDSM, who may themselves not be kinky.
Yeah.
Like you don't have to be into kink to be compassionate about the fact that some people are kinky and that we deserve rights and that we deserve space to not be stigmatized for practicing the things that we do.
Yeah.
And that it's a really great empathy machine to embody that feeling and say, like, you know, that like really pleasurable, tingly feeling on the back of your neck. Getting spanked gives me that feeling.
Right.
Or like, you know, that sort of, and then this sort of like synesthetic allegorical thing that you were talking about with colors, for example, being like, you know, when you have that like purple feeling in your thighs, that's how I feel when someone calls me a little bitch.
It's and that can be helpful to learn what you like and not just be like, well, I'm this kind of person, so I should like this.
Totally.
But to start listening to your body, that's what it is. I think something else that comes up a lot is processing the more societal implication of liking certain things and letting go of shame. And if your desires bump up against your trauma, getting to have the therapeutic space to process that and help your body understand the difference between the bad thing that happened and the dynamic that you are in.
I love that because it makes me think about the distress that people feel about something like, oh, they feel like they watch a lot of porn, right? There's all this discussion now about, you know, is porn addictive?
Right.
You know, are people getting messed up sexually because they're like watching so much porn and masturbating, right? So I talk a lot on this show about the studies that point to the distress about so-called porn addiction coming from somebody's self-regard or like a lack of correspondence between the kind of person that they think that they want to be and like what their desire is driving them towards and what they think that their behavior says about them.
Right, right. The most damaging thing to sexuality is shame and trauma, obviously. But
yeah. If we're what's the relationship between trauma and shame?
Oh, this is so fucking fascinating. Mm. Trauma and shame show up in the body in the same ways.
God damn it.
I know.
get out of there.
Right? So in the body, it can bring up the same physical reactions. It brings up the same emotions. It can have similar long-term effects. They're so interconnected. And also, obviously, there's so much shame that comes up with trauma, especially sexual trauma.
Yeah.
Shame is like one of the biggest parts of healing is getting past the shame.
So is shame traumatizing yourself? Like when you're shaming yourself, are you like traumatizing yourself in like little ways every time you?
Yeah, I think it's also sort of like an internalizing of abuse, whether it's the abuse of patriarchy or the abuse of an actual abusive person.
Yeah.
Is feeling bad, feeling undeserving, feeling wrong, feeling dirty.
It feels like you've got me in this. Now thinking mm-hmm. about embodiment has got me in this like allegorical space or figurative language space where I'm like imagining shame being like you're like making a place for trauma to live in your body.
Oh wow.
It's like you're making mm-hmm. you're like making it feel more at home, which
absolutely
like we don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So like but where does that function come mm-hmm. from? Like why do we feel shame? Mm-hmm. Like why does shame like want to make trauma feel at home? Is that again going back to what you're saying about is shame kind of like your body trying to make itself feel safe?
Yeah, I think a lot of things, but in particular if you think about kids and kids who experience trauma, so or anything. Kids are so egocentric, which is why they're so freaking cute, is they everything is like about them.
Right.
Which means that if something bad happens, it's their fault. Right? Mm. Which is not true. Usually it's not. And so I think that's something that we learn when we're little.
Yeah.
This is like kind of a segue into how I think age play is like such a important part of healing. And
it's interesting. I was you read my mind.
There is a kind of therapy that I really like using called parts work, where you connect to the younger selves that you have inside of you, and they have ages and sometimes different genders. And
gosh, that sounds like age play.
Yeah, it pretty much is. but different container, right? So this is in the therapeutic space.
Is that related to the sort of like antiquated idea of the inner child? Like
It is. Yeah, that's what it is. It's inner child work, but it's a little more complex where we don't just have one inner child, right? Like, we can all sound like a 16-year-old. We can all sound like an 8-year-old. We can all go into this very, very young place when we're being held of being a baby. Like, all of us contain these multitudes, right?
Yeah.
So parts work, which is the kind of therapy I really like using, helps us connect to our younger selves and reparent them or care for them.
Mm.
So, for example, when we get triggered, sometimes we, adult us, are not triggered. It is our younger self that's triggered.
Right.
And then that little 8-year-old is so scared and that fear gets so big that then that's all we feel and we lose our adult self.
So that's when you have to be your own daddy. Or mommy.
God damn it, that's when you have to be your own mommy or daddy.
Or
that's
auntie.
Right.
Or uncle. Yep. Or just kind, older caregiver. You have to be your own caregiver.
Yes. So that's another overlap, I think, between kink and therapy. And they are really different because that is building an inner capacity for you to be able to care for yourself. And it's not particularly sexual.
Mm.
Not that age play is always sexual, obviously. But
sure.
So that is different. And you can bring that into a dynamic. For example, I think probably exploring parts work would help people connect to their little. I'm sure that would be helpful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what is the benefit? I mean, I don't mean to sound dismissive. That is awesome.
Yeah.
And it's nice to think that we all do have a little that we might want to mm-hmm. engage in various ways.
Yeah.
A little persona, like a persona that is younger than the age that we are now.
Right.
What is the benefit of bringing sex into it? Obviously, mm-hmm. like, it's important for us to talk, especially like both of us, like being professionals, talking about this in this way where it's like age play doesn't have to be sexual. We can talk about it in a kinky way, but you can also talk about this in your therapeutic practice, which like does not involve sexuality. Mm-hmm. But what is the benefit of bringing sexuality into it, arousal or genital stimulation or orgasm or, you know, other kinds of sexuality, like either solo or with a partner or with a group?
Right. This is when there's a very clear distinction between my job and a play space or a play partner. As much as I talk about sex in the room, like there is no sex happening or and a lot of the times with inner child or parts work, we're not talking so much about sex. It's more about caretaking, survival responses, and trauma.
Yeah.
So that is like, that is the container.
Yeah.
And then the other container is like little space or a daddy girl dynamic or a mommy girl dynamic.
Yeah.
And then sex can be very healing. First off, it's caretaking. It's just a different kind of caretaking. It's a caretaking I can't do as a therapist and don't want to. Babysitter, daddy, mommy can care for you in this physical way.
Yeah.
Also, we all in this world have sexual trauma from being raised in a shaming, heteronormative, body-shaming society. And so if you're like little, gets to feel like it's okay to like girls, right?
Mm.
Or it's okay to want to have sex, right? That heals that younger part of us that, and shame. We're talking about healing shame. I think that is like such a good in to healing shame, is because shame starts when we're little.
Yeah.
It's a really old feeling.
Ugh, it does. It feels so old and outdated.
Uh-huh.
It feels stale.
Uh-huh.
But when you're hungry, you like still eat the stale chips in the pantry.
Also to say that, right, shame is like stale. But it, again, it serves a purpose. And so this is another thing that's really important, is that all feelings serve purposes. So shame is what helps us understand what's okay in society and what's not okay. And not in like a, women are supposed to be like this, not like that. But like, right, it's not okay to interrupt somebody when they're like presenting on something, for example. You would feel shame. So it serves a purpose. We're not trying to throw away shame. I think a lot of people could use a little more shame.
right. Like the idea of people who are shameless, perhaps a man who will shamelessly interrupt your lecture to say, I don't really have a question. It's more of a comment. Right?
Devil's
like,
advocate here.
Right. So that's the function of shame, in the same way that stereotypes are actually seen neutrally are actually like a psychological function that like helps us to understand the world and that we need to be critical of our propensity to stereotype in certain ways. But it would be foolish to think that the project is not stereotyping, which is why the whole idea of like, I don't see color is like totally a folly. Because we do. But it's like about what we think. In what ways are we like stereotyping and associating?
Yeah. So these things serve a purpose.
Yeah. How can health professionals improve their best practices for giving care to all the kinds of people who listen to the show and that this show is about and for, and I know that there is like an hour long answer to each of these, but to, you know, best practices for giving care to queer people, giving care to kinky people, giving care to different kinds of sex workers, giving care to non-monogamous people, giving care to sluts. Are there some just like basic ways that best practices can be improved, or even just like what is your hope as a therapist with a relatively new practice and like a lifetime of a practice ahead of you? Like what are your hopes for how things are going to change, can change?
I think the biggest suggestion / hope is that we stop pathologizing people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a bad thing to keep trauma in the room. So like if someone comes in and they're like, I have this desire, I don't think it's unfair to hold someone's life experiences next to that. But instead of it being like, this is 100% because of part of the DSM or this part of your childhood, I really hope that we stop doing that.
So that's what you mean by pathologizing, like the idea that if somebody comes in and says, I love to be spanked erotically and I was spanked as a child, being like, well, you like to be spanked erotically because you were spanked as a child.
Which might be true. Also,
it might
be
true. Right.
And this is also like, something that a lot of feminist psychoanalysis have done really great work around, which is that we have no idea what a psychically healthy woman looks like. Sorry, everyone. And that's Karen Horney. She was an incredible psychoanalyst. And we never will.
Yeah.
Right? And so desires don't exist in a vacuum.
Yeah.
And so saying that, so throwing that out is not helpful also, but then saying that that's the only reason why is just, it's also just like not true, right? Like we have sensory receptors over our whole body. Being spanked feels good because it like, I don't have to tell you this, Tina. Right? But it like we...
curious. Interesting.
Right? Like things happen. Like vibration happens in like very sensitive parts of our body. So like there's that. And then there's also the more emotional side to it, feeling owned or feeling
punished.
Not in control, punished. Like these are all things that like do feel good. And yes, is it probably partially because of the world that we live in? Yeah. Isn't everything?
Yeah.
And so it's not helpful to be like, once we heal your daddy issues, you won't want to get spanked anymore. Like how boring also. And also if someone is like, yeah, I want to do that. Great. That's fucking up to them.
Yeah.
If you want to work through kinks that don't sit with you, that's okay too.
Yeah, totally. I use spanking as an example for obvious reasons that my listeners, including you, are all familiar with, but also because I feel like it is a very sort of versatile, you know, allegorical example.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people who are into erotic spanking, we could draw a connection between the fact that they were spanked as a child.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who are into being spanked erotically because they weren't spanked.
Right.
There are people who never even thought about corporal punishment before they became adults who are into it for any number of reasons. It's really about like not only like pathologizing someone and being like, well, like drawing like a like a false correlation.
Yeah.
It's not useful. Right? Especially, like, if somebody's coming in and they're saying, I'm just stressed because I'm really turned on by being spanked. And that disturbs me because it's a way that I was punished unconsensually when I was a child, right? Like, the issue, it sounds to me, you're the professional, you tell me that, like, the issue that we're trying to learn to focus on is, where is that distress coming from? Not treating, like, trying to, like, unlearn that association or saying, like, well, that association is bad and we're trying to get it so that you don't have that desire anymore, which good luck with that.
Yeah, totally. Right. And for some people, learning and unpacking and being like, it's okay to want these things. It's okay to have desires that mirror your trauma or mirror other people's trauma is enough. And they're like, oh, well, shit. Okay, cool. I'm kind of into that.
Yeah.
And like, I'm cool with it. And some people are like, okay, yeah, I have like thought about how it's okay to have this desire and I'm done shaming myself, but I really don't want to have this kind of sex actually. And I would like to like reprogram myself a bit, right? And that's okay too.
How do you reprogram people, Andrea?
Oh, God. Again, that has a lot to do with the body, right? So if you've only ever had sex that was non-consensually has some sort of power dynamic and you want to let that go. I'm thinking in particular about a lot of clients, and I'm comfortable saying myself as well, who had to like unlearn heterosexuality. That's a real fucking thing, right?
Yeah.
You have to unlearn dynamics and being automatically submissive, not voicing your desires, being able to state what you want, being able to say no. And so that is an unlearning of everything we are taught about sex. And I think that can be a similar avenue for some people who are like, yeah, I have this fantasy, but I don't want to have this fantasy.
Yeah.
So like, where does it come from? Where did you first learn this? Wow, God, I guess it comes from this, like from when I was little. Or what is it about this that makes me uncomfortable? And maybe it's about healing more emotional trauma and then the fantasy goes away. I think that's okay. Like that we have to have room to talk about sometimes like kinks we have, we don't want to.
Yeah.
And that it is healing to let go of those and find other ways of being.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of flip side of that question is what can queer people, kinky people, sluts, sex workers or people with experience in the sex industry, survivors, do you have tips for how folks with non-normative desires and identities can better advocate for themselves with their care providers?
Yes. So the first thing I want to say about that is if you are someone who lives somewhere like New York or Chicago or Los Angeles, there are so many wonderful queer, kink, and poly-affirming therapists, and you do not have to settle for someone who isn't. Insurance is a huge barrier for that, but I will say that there are really incredible agencies that are very good at training their clinicians to be affirming to those identities. So they are out there. For example, like in New York, Callan Lord, ICP is another really great clinic that takes a bunch of insurance. You deserve to have a therapist who understands your life. You deserve to not have to take on the role of educator with your therapist. Totally. It's okay to end a therapeutic relationship if it's not serving you.
Yeah.
Also, if it's not serving you because you don't like the kind of therapy, that's another thing that I think is so you are interviewing the therapist, right? Hmm. What are your views about this, on sex, on relationships, on queerness? But also, like, what is the kind of therapy that you do? Because all therapists really do use different types of ways of thinking and have different training. So figure out, like, what you want to get out of this.
Yeah.
So feeling empowered enough to do that versus, like, okay, well, I guess this is, like, good enough.
This person is the authority, so they must be right, or I need to, like, keep going along with this.
No, and that is, like, very hard to unlearn. I think that. And then if you're somewhere that is where there are less availability for therapists who are educated in these things, again, you are deserving of your therapist understanding your life. And so if you feel comfortable to provide resources, it is on your therapist to educate themselves if they're going to get to work with you, which is, they should be so lucky, right? So if you're in a, for example, not that all rural places don't have therapists who are educated in these things, I think it is harder, then it's okay to say in your intake, I hold these identities, and if you read these books and have these understandings, then we can work together.
Nice.
And that does require a lot of work on your part, which isn't fair, but it is just sort of the reality in that you shouldn't have to compartmentalize yourself. We have to do that so much in our day-to-day life, and therapy should not be a place where you have to hold different parts of yourself back.
I love the idea of everybody going into a new into their first session with a new therapist with a syllabus.
Totally.
I actually, probably that is a great practice to suggest, like, even if you're not currently in therapy, like, what syllabus would you give a new therapist or your current therapist? Like, what books do you feel like people should read before they start working with you?
Yes, absolutely. And also, if, like, that is still limiting, or if you're in a country where, like, it's not safe to disclose certain parts of your sex life, therapists will work with you remotely.
Nice.
Right? So, like, I'm very happy to work with people who are in a place where they just don't have access, or it's not safe to talk about different parts of their sexuality or gender. So just finding someone, there are a lot of people who are very willing to work with you over the phone or over Skype. You deserve to have someone who understands your life and isn't going to shame you.
Fuck yeah. Because shame makes weird places in your body for trauma to live.
Yeah.
Andrea, thank you so much for talking about your practice today. We are going to do a Why Are People Into That now. So if folks are listening to this in Tarot Bang and they want to hear more from Andrea, look for that in your feeds. And where can people find out more about your practice?
Yes. Folks can visit the therapy collective that I'm a part of online at gstherapycollective.com. And folks can also find me on this very incredible listing of queer, kink, and poly-affirming clinicians. It's called Manhattan Alternative.
Cool.
.com. And then you can also follow me on Instagram at Somatic Witch.
Oh, yes. Your Instagram has been popping lately. I do a lot of screenshotting, and then, like, that's a practice that I have when I'm disassociating on the subway is, like, listening to music and then, like, flipping through, like, things that I've screenshot. And if I've, like, screenshot some awesome advice about attachment theory from your Instagram, then I'll, like, read it and, like, really like sit and contemplate it for a little while, like, on the subway.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and that's Somatic Witch on Instagram.
Yes. And then it's the Gender and Sexuality Therapy Collective, which is in Manhattan, which is where I practice. And then the very beautifully lengthy list of other therapists like me is manhattanalternative.com.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for being on the show.
Yeah. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.